rules like that somehow, but then it's going to happen.
Well, that's your opinion. I think I was doing
it.
Hey, Murph, don't forget I have that stuff.
I know.
And thank you for your comments on how good things.
If this kid is really doing
something,
okay, I'd like to call the regular meeting of the town council for June 8th, 2026 to order. Please join me in a pledge of allegiance, followed by a moment of silence in honor of our military.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Agnes, could I have a roll call, please?
Here.
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 All right. Right now we have a presentation tonight. BJH Advisors LLC, presentation of the SIF Round 5 funded Revive and Renew Routes 163 and 32 final report.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just comment that this is BJH Advisors along with Peary Associates. They've been working on this project now for a year. They've given some reports to the town council at a couple of different times. We've had town meetings. We've had hearings. We've had a lot of involvement by the general public. They put an awful lot of information into this report, a lot more than I thought was possible. So if I'd like to invite the entire council down into the front row so you can see what's going on back behind you.
To the front row.
So why does this plan matter? Routes 32 and 163 are really the primary commercial and civic corridors in Malmo. Route 32 runs right through here, Uncasville, which is really the historic heart of Mottville. The conditions of these corridors really directly affect Mottville's economic vitality, housing opportunities in Mottville, and community identity in terms of where is Mottville's center. The two corridors also, we feel, represent Mottville's best opportunity to channel growth into visible and high-impact locations, which Laura is going to be showing you some of our visions for the what we're calling opportunity nodes along the corridors. So just in terms of giving you an agenda of what we're going to cover, and this is very high-level. We have a detailed report that we're giving to the town, so what you're seeing today is very high-level. But quickly, we'll talk about the market context and what we see as the Mottville opportunity. The zoning and land use context, and we had presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission back in early March. What we heard from the community, we had a number of community engagement events. Our approach, and Laura's going to show you our visions for really four nodes: the town center, which is here, the Cove, which is up at Horton's Cove, Palmertown Village along 163, and the Bank Paper Mill site, also on 163 near the water tower, which is the brownfield site that we were required to look at as part of the grant. I'll quickly talk about development feasibility, gap financing, and infrastructure investment, and then we'll talk about our priority next steps. So I realize this is a lot on a slide, but the market context, why now? We did a pretty extensive market analysis that we presented to the town in April, but it went through a few iterations. But like, what are the major findings from our market analysis? Southeastern Connecticut, it's experiencing continued employment growth and related housing demand. That's in the whole region. Montville itself benefits from its proximity to employment hubs, an electric boat down in Groton and New London, obviously the Mohegan Sun, which is the biggest employer in town, the whole I-395 corridor, which links you north and south, and future growth at Preston Riverwalk, which is the Mohegan's project across the Thames. One thing that's really interesting, and it's really illustrated graphically on the upper right bar chart, is when you take the 20 to 34 age group, just according to the most recent census data, that's the fastest growing age cohort in Montville. The light blue bars are Montville, and the dark blue bars are the region. So you're comparing Montville to the Southeast Connecticut region. And you can see for Montville, the light blue is at 10.2% growth between 2014 and 2024. That's your fastest growing age cohort. Everything else is kind of shrinking. And compare that, and it's shrinking in the region too. And compare that to the region where the fastest growing age cohort is 55 and over. So you have this young, 20 to 34 age group that is the fastest growing age group in Montville, and there are few housing options in town for this group. And there's also, our market analysis found, significant retail leakage in the sense that people are going outside of Montville to shop. We felt, with targeted investment, and this was detailed in our market analysis, Montville is pretty well positioned to capture a larger share of the regional housing demand. We said, with the right investment, Montville can be ambitious and capture 25 to 30% of regional housing demand over the next 5 years in Southeast Connecticut, and that would equate to about 400 to 500 new units over 5 years. So what's Montville's opportunity here? It's to really guide new growth into the right places in the optimal form with the most effective improvements that support that. And I just want to note that the rent, the pink is Montville, the blue is the region, the study area they've identified, basically Southeastern Connecticut. And you can see both lines kind of, they correlate with each other in the sense that they're both going up. But you can see that Montville's rents for multifamily, generally apartments, is much lower than the study area. And there's not a lot of multifamily properties in Montville. I mean, Oxo Lofts was the first multifamily project in Montville in like 13 years. So anyway, next slide. What's the opportunity? How can Montville differentiate itself among the towns around it? We think offer a more attainable alternative to higher cost nearby communities, particularly for young families and first-time buyers. Focus on compact, mixed-use nodes, which Laura will talk about, that have housing services and stronger public and civic spaces for a town identity. And build places that are more walkable and kind of more coherent and recognizable, not just more auto-oriented corridor frontage. And then differentiate Montville through convenience and livability and visible placemaking rather than just building at scale. Zoning. Zoning high level, we gave a pretty detailed presentation to the Planning and Zoning Commission back in early March. But, Route 32, the zoning there with the overlay zone, it already supports mixed use and multifamily development in the key locations that we're looking at. However, the current overlay zone, it still depends, from our findings, it still depends too much on underlying zoning. It has to defer to the underlying zoning, which limits density, it limits flexibility regarding parking, it limits kind of the predictable form that we want for the vision. Route 163, the overlay zone doesn't cover Route 163, so there's fewer zoning tools there to support the compact village-scale development that we see as part of our vision. The state housing bill, HB 8002, it gives Montville an opportunity to better align your zoning with housing and mixed-use goals. Our recommendations here are to clarify uses, streamline review, adopt stronger design and form standards and priority nodes. And Dennis Gadier, the planning director, he couldn't be here tonight, but Dennis certainly supports this, and I think the planning and zoning committee was generally behind this as well. We did a lot of community engagement starting in the early fall. We were at the Montville Farmers Market, and Councilmember Southard, I think you were very helpful in terms of us having a booth there. We had a lot of one-on-one meetings. We had town halls. We had a meeting right here in March, and we heard a lot. We also had online surveys. We got the steering committee. Anyway, I'm going to have Laura tell you what we learned from the community at all of these various meetings.
So the analysis and the market study and the deep understanding of context is one piece of the puzzle. But we're very concerned that Montville, as we sort of focus on these development nodes and target areas, that the community has deep and continued input on what the character of this new development looks like, because we're very concerned that it remain looking like Montville but create new opportunities, especially for that age cohort that Steve listed. What we found when we looked at the overall complexion of housing and residential uses in Montville is that there's strength in single family, dispersed, but that younger cohort that you want to invite to town to eventually move here and raise their families here, we saw a gap in opportunities for those folks. We also saw sort of an opportunity to complete the housing cycle with first-time homes or rentals to larger single family, and then the opportunities for those who want to age in Montville but are sort of done with their large family house have a place to go. And those places to go are what lead to what we'll call mixed use neighborhoods that are very walkable, very condensed in terms of their footprint. And we tested a lot of these ideas with the community. We're also very interested, we showed a lot of photos and a lot of you were there and gave your ranked preference on visual character and scale and heights of buildings and what the public realm looks like, because we know it's the public realm that kind of sets the table, if you will, for the development to come. So as Steve mentioned, we've met in small focus groups with different age cohorts, we met in person, we created online surveys, and we got very clear feedback and preference for medium density housing, so that means 2.5 to 3-ish kind of stories, not high density that you would find in an urban area, with mixed use and very walkable nodes. So we're really happy to hear that, because that was in alignment with what some of the market analysis was showing us. And what's nice about those compact footprints is it begins to shift them to walkable neighborhoods rather than having to always use one's car. So that's a great set of feedback that we got as well. There was definitely strong preference for the town center being a big focus of an, sort of an igniting node, if you will, of understanding the cultural and civic area that's around Town Hall and how that can become a diverse and mixed-use neighborhood. And also, we had a lot of discussion about St. John's Church and other cultural and religious institutions around it, how those can be impacted and improved as well through walkable, small-scale neighborhoods around Town Hall. There was a strong preference for really practical placemaking improvements like sidewalks, lighting, landscaping, and active gathering spaces. No one wanted sort of large lawns that were sort of empty and just look at in every case, but everyone wanted participatory, active outdoor spaces where people could come together in what we call third spaces. It's not home, it's not work, it's a place where we gather socially. So whether those are cafes, outdoor parks, a town green where concerts can happen, those places where Montville residents can come together and be together in that time. And then, as I mentioned at the offset, just sort of really focusing on maintaining the character of Montville was very important. So we looked at 11 different zones in the 32 and 163 corridors. You can see them diagrammed here. And those zones had geographic or anchor characteristics that stood out to us that said, even though we may not focus on all of these roads or the continuity of the entire mileage of those links, that we could intervene in specific igniter spots when the certain characteristics were there. So on the 32, the sort of rolling hill geography, if you drive up 32, you notice you go up a hill and down into a little village that already has some commercial activity, already has a little bit of housing. So you can see the patterns on 32 for that. And then as we go up 163, we run into Bridge Street and Palmer Town Center, which have a very strong historic character as well. And those sort of clued us into areas that we were going to focus on. So as a group and as a community, we ranked the areas of 1 through 11 of these potential nodes and landed on the first priority as being this town center, which is number one, where we're standing on the map. Number three is Horton Cove, where the strip plaza, we're bound on the north by where the old Dunkin' Donuts was, bound on the south by where the old McDonald's was, right? And how can we begin to see that in a different walkable node? And that those two nodes would actually synergize and support each other because they're in walking distance. If we can create some connections with the Oxibotto
River. One and three, yes.
If we can use high resource outdoor spaces like a river walk and connections to the water, then those two nodes can begin to work together. And then Palmer Town is a sort of natural existing village character, much smaller scale. The community preference scale for that was 1 to 2 stories, so very much in keeping with the character of the buildings there, except the few scattered factory buildings that still remain. And then, as Steve mentioned, Site 7 is the paper mill site near the water tower as part of our brownfield obligation. How could we begin to think about that? And you can see we were really enamored with the water tower. It became part of the logo of the project. And it really became an entry point to the whole sort of downtown area. So we really recommended focusing investment in these pockets or nodes to create dynamic anchors that then would become connected over time. And you'll see the vision that we developed for what are numbered here, nodes 1, 2, and 3, really are become set a pattern for how to approach the other nodes down the road as the rest of the town develops. And the idea is to set the table, as I mentioned before, with the public realm and placemaking elements, so sidewalks, streetscape, character, and create a vision that when developers and partners, property owners want to develop their own properties or work with the town, that there's a vision in place that everyone sort of can circle around and say, yes, we can imagine that, and here's the direction to go. So that was our approach to the vision framework. And so with that, we'll run right into the strategies of each vision. So this is the town center. You can see here, is there a pointer on this? No, it doesn't seem like it. Okay.
Do you want me to get up and point?
Yeah, that would be great. So the idea of the town center, and this is an idea that gained a lot of response, is really organizing the town center around a public green. Okay, and so that's where number four is in the middle here. It is adjacent to the side of the senior center. It's to the front and left of, or just north side of the town hall. And it becomes a public realm project that when it's in this location and we begin to connect and create a neighborhood around it. So it has civic uses, cultural uses. We even speculated that perhaps in the old town hall building, there could be a library annex in that building ultimately. Part of our job, by the way, is to imagine future uses. It doesn't mean that the uses there aren't always supportive, but as uses evolve, what uses could we imagine that could create more synergy and connectivity? So you'll hear me suggest some uses, and it doesn't mean the uses there now don't work, but these are possibilities to think about in the future. So creating around the green civic spaces, and at the north end of the green where number 22 is, we imagined a bandshell or some public performance space. So really there could be concerts on the green, there could be parties on the green. It really is the civic living room of Monaco. Across then 32, where there's already a really nice group of existing businesses, we continue to support that business development along the 32 by thinking about creating sidewalks, walkable streets, a little bit of separation between the roadway and the sidewalks so people don't feel like they're competing with automobiles, right? To get people out and walking, it has to be safe. We heard in the surveys that safety, walking along the edge of the street, was really important to people. And then that the whole public realm around the 32 up to the Oxobasso River crossing, across the dam, you can see a sort of bright green line up there. Perhaps that could be a greenway trail that could connect across and up to the Horton Cove area, which we'll show you next. We imagined a realigned Maple Avenue that could have mixed-use residential on it. So two- and three-story buildings, some retail on the ground floor to activate the space, maybe where the Dots Cafe building is right now between 163, 32, and Maple. We create a new building there that's set back from the roadway with a public plaza so that you can see from the town green across that plaza to a safer crosswalk and a realigned intersection of 163 and 32 across to a trailhead at the dam, the old dam across the Oxobasso. So that whole front line where the pink line is sort of a public way that connects town green to the Oxobasso Grove. Then as we continue around counterclockwise, around town hall, St. John's becomes an anchor institution in this downtown cultural and civic life, and that we're introducing a new roadway to the east of St. John's and the old school, and thinking about that as being a row of townhouses, not commercial activity, but some residential activity, and creating what becomes a multi-sided residential town green and town center. You'll notice to the left, Maple Avenue, there's a number 6 that connects to Route 163. We think one really important component to realize this vision is to create a path for trucks that are very important in serving the businesses up on Maple Avenue, have a way to get to 163 and get to 395 without coming all the way to Route 32 and that intersection and having to U-turn back onto the 163, right? So we're recommending some kind of configuration there, a sort of broader intersection where trucks can route from 395 up onto Maple Avenue, but then from Maple Avenue back onto there, creating a more pedestrian-oriented center. Cars will still go, connections will still be made, but if we can reroute the trucks, it'll be much more pleasant for people to be there. It's always a balance between those connections and people.
I just want to say one thing that we heard loud and clear when we were here in March, is the respecting the integrity of St. John's Church. And you know, what we really want to emphasize is that we see the town center as, you know, complementing St. John's Church. And St. John's Church becomes a stronger institution. And, you know, the St. John's Church's campus is, you know, is respected. And that campus is part of a more vibrant town center.
And then we see lots of activities there. Playground, a community garden next to the senior center, other enabling activities because the community was very clear to us. They wanted to see programmable outdoor activities in all of the outdoor spaces. So the last thing I'll say is down at the bottom of the slide where numbers 15 and 23 are, we're suggesting a reconfigured front mall, if you will, or lawn that does lead up to town hall here. So the town hall eventually sets itself up for a pedestrian green to the right and through traffic over, you know, behind town hall up on the new roadway where the number 11 purple townhouses are and back out to Maple Street there. But it's also a way to create a platform and focus the view on town hall as the center of your civic pride and your civic connection and your community engagement that we saw here tonight with the previous hearings. So here's an image of what the intersection of Maple Avenue and 32 could look at. This is slightly flooding up slight elevated view. Purnell's is to the right. Friendly Pizza and the other retail businesses are to the left, behind the yellow outlined image, which is what exists today. And so you can see in the building on the right, echoing some industrial maybe character, the Oxo Lofts. That's a new building that's pushed back in the docks site to create that outdoor plaza where retail businesses, restaurants could float out onto the sidewalk, these tables could come out. One thing that we heard from folks is that there's a real desire for restaurants for people to come again in those third spaces and sit down, where you can get, and someone said this, a $20 hamburger. Like, no $5 hamburgers, quick in and out, but a place to be and hang out with people and enjoy a meal in some place that wasn't too fancy, but wasn't...
Maybe a $15 hamburger.
What's that?
Maybe a $15. Okay. $20.
I don't know, just a collaborator. So, anyway, and then you can see as Maple rises, Maple has a ridge right across from the senior center and it begins to slope back down, breaking down the scale of the multifamily housing there with gables and character that are very much in the reference image that had a very strong and overwhelming preference. You can see the corner of the town green, that the tree corner where the wall is now gets slightly reconfigured to allow the town green to step down to that corner and cross over and create a visual connection to the hill on the right and the Oxo brook at the left. You can see a diagram or a band shell there, and you can see off to the left. Off to the left, the steeple of St. John's sort of framing this view off to the left. And then here's a view of a reconfigured approach to town hall. It's a way to create a public space and a sort of pedestal, if you will, in front of town hall that opens up the view to it instead of hides the view through a series of trees. It keeps the Veterans Memorial at the bottom right, maybe adding a town clock at that point, allowing banners and sidewalks and streetscape elements up and around the plaza, and then framing the view of town hall as the center of your of civic pride and engagement. There was a strong preference for the placemaking vocabulary to be kind of traditional wrought iron feeling around the civic spaces. So you can see in the rendering here, banners on light posts and sort of a wrought iron style, especially in the town clock, with a very close second preference for a sort of wooded or natural feeling. And we thought it'd be great to have those public realm elements near the trails and hiking and biking systems in the Blue Way along the river eventually, and the sort of more traditional wrought iron in the town node centers. So now we're going to move up the 32 over the first hill to where the shopping plaza is now. As I mentioned at the north, this is just before the bend of the road past where the old Dunkin' Donuts was, and extending down on the lower left to where the old McDonald's was. And the idea of this is slightly more dense, slightly larger scale, but retake some of the roadway now, where I saw when we first started working on the project, people standing waiting for a bus on the road there, and I felt like they were taking their hands into their life. There's no shade, there's no sidewalk, there's no safe place for them to be, and really reimagining this node as a vibrant, mixed-use destination. And so we also wanted to integrate the existing shopping plaza, which is really important for folks and use in their day-to-day. You'll see that we reimagined the parking lot with new parking standard landscape that the town has implemented, with having trees in the parking lot and breaking down the scale of endless paving. So we'll demonstrate that. And then you can see in the lighter pink buildings the sort of infill strategies of the mixed-use elements. What we noticed when we look here is that Horton Cove is very, very close to this area, but one never knows it when you're driving up the road. And so thinking about that, we know from other examples in other municipalities that when mixed-use commercial is adjacent to high-quality natural resources, they have a synergizing effect. Draws more people, it draws more interest. And so this is one of the strategies that we're looking at, and we'll say, how is Montville going to attract this additional residential population? It's by setting the table with items that people want to have in their life and want to experience in their life.
So you're talking walking trails and bike trails that connect you to the cove and to the riverfront.
And you can see the little green trail poking out in the bottom left that's reconnecting back to the town center, right? We also are suggesting that Pink Row, which kind of comes up from the bottom of the screen and kind of zips over in a diagonal into 32, just above the buildings that are labeled 4 right there, that actually connects to a roadway around the back of the plaza so we can gain more continuous footage.
Because Oxo Box of Lofts is like right
here. A little bit further down the screen, exactly. So here's an image of what this could look like as a walkable mixed-use neighborhood. And you can see in the lower left what it looks like currently, which you all are very familiar with. No trees, lots of sunlight, no continuous sidewalk. But there is enough geometry in road sidewalk to think about a very wide double-sided tree corridor that's a mixed-use, multi-use path for bicycles and pedestrians. We can see the building on the right, which is the building that was in the plan, just where Pink Row used to come in and intersect. A restaurant on the ground floor with the restaurateurs, the visitors coming out and activating the public space. You can see to the trees just beyond that on the right, that's what the new landscape standards look like for parking blocks in large big box retail, and how that begins to sort of break down the scale of those large uninhabited areas. And interestingly enough, when you see on the left, we don't have enough room to have an extra wide walk and multimodal path there, but even having smaller scale trees that come under the power lines helps break down and create a zone for cars and a zone for people. And so having those two things happen simultaneously is very much possible. You can see the traditional lighting standards, the potential for banners announcing upcoming events, and just this beginning to share the space between pedestrians and automobile drivers. The last two spots we're going to look at is Palmertown Village. This is at Bridge Street, where Bridge Street connects Maple Avenue to Route 163. What's really interesting and charming about this intersection is the small scale of individual, really neighborhood stores, really a village feeling. 163 is very, very narrow at this point, geographically, because of the river on one side and the hill coming down on the other. And so to maintain that dense street character, to have a few more retail and residential shops on that street, you can see we sort of densified along the edge, but we've created an internal street, if you will, of parking. So folks can get there, Steve, if you just park
like
to that.
Right here.
To that, yes.
Yeah, sorry.
To that, exactly. So it could be residential buildings behind, a shared parking street for internal access, but the village character would still remain on 163 there. Post offices there's a bakery, there's a building.
Those are all existing.
Yeah. Yes, the orangey colors are existing. And then across on Bridge Street, we saw repeating a larger building footprint, not unlike building number 3, which is currently under in a development study for redeveloping that, kind of like Oxo Box of Lofts into multifamily. And then we saw this as an opportunity to create a trailhead, or you can see the bright green line again coming along some of the old railroad property and along the river, where eventually that could be a rails to trails connection that extends ultimately out to Oak Dale and then all the way down to Town Green and eventually to the town pier out on the Thames. This could be a place where folks could come in and park, pull the bikes off the cars, hop on the bikes with their children and bike down to town center. And then a little bit further west, we go up to the Bank Paper Mill site. This is right where the water tower is, which is number 1 in this image. This is really imagined in collaboration with town members as the entry or the portal to sort of the downtown zone, the greater village center zone and town center zone. And this we envision because of the narrowness of the space between 163, Wheeler Pond, and the beginning of the Ox of Oxo, that this becomes an outdoor recreational space. It could have a skate park, very naturalized skate park. There's one up in Willimantic that's very, very popular. Ice cream shop, coffee shop, outdoor playground in areas, and then access perhaps to the water tower and some hiking trails across the river over the existing dam or with a new bridge coming across. And you can see a fair amount of parking here again with the thought that a multimodal trail down to town center like could be accessed through this area.
Okay. Well, that was me to talk about development feasibility. So BJH Advisors, we took the development visions that Laura did and her team, and we did a financial analysis, not so much of the public infrastructure, but of the buildings, the multifamily, the townhouses, because we wanted to see if they pencil, as developers say, do these projects work financially. And I will say, candidly, that gap financing will be needed, because in practice, in practice terms, the current rents in Montville, multifamily rents, do not fully support today's higher construction costs. So that creates a financing gap for new development. However, I want to emphasize that this does not mean that our vision is unrealistic. In fact, in most of Connecticut currently, the high construction costs, the market rents do not support the high construction costs. And that's really true almost everywhere in Connecticut, except like the high cost corridor in Fairfield County along the coast, where New York City commuters go. And there's a lot of programs in Connecticut that address that gap. The State Department of Housing, the Connecticut Housing Finance Administration all have multiple programs that we'll be recommending in our report that municipalities use. And in fact, when you think of recent developments in Montville, so Oxo-Boxo Lofts, it's a mixed income development. It relied heavily on state programs. Horizon View is a new multifamily development that's going up on Route 32. It also relied on state housing programs. This is a common way that multifamily developments get built in Connecticut currently, and we don't see that it would be different here.
The upside, if I could just interject, the upside of having to solve the problem for the gap is that if state financing comes into play as it did with Oxo-Boxo, then there's a long-term agreement that certain of those units remain affordable, and that affordability formula is based on the area median income. And so that means a majority of apartments will be at market rates, so whatever the market says, but some of them will be dedicated to being affordable for, 40-year period or whatever easement period is established by the financing, which is good because we heard over and over again from residents that affordability of these new units is really important. So current residents have a place to stay.
Yeah, and that's how Oxo-Boxo was built. And that's Oxo-Boxo, by the way, in case you didn't recognize.
And these subsidies aren't lasting forever. These become market stabilized generally within 5 years of being developed. It's got the stabilization period. And then they're self-supporting from that point.
Yeah.
But almost every development, as Steve said, except Lower Fairfield in Connecticut, has some combination of formula to get to the stabilization.
As I noted, I guess the goal is we don't want to subsidize these projects indefinitely, but we need a catalyst to get the projects going. So also the public infrastructure funding, that's important in terms of how do you, and we noted in the beginning when I was talking about market context, and we said, wouldn't it be great if ambitiously Montville could capture a larger percentage of projected growth in the region over the next 5 years? Well, how does Montville differentiate itself to attract that growth? And it's investments in public improvements, which is a lot of what Laura showed you. We'll note anecdotally that, Dennis has heard from developers who have come to Montville to look at sites developed, and ultimately, and I'm not going to name any names, but developers walked away and said, there's a sense of place there in terms of building and development. So how do you create the sense of place. And it's, you know, public improvements that make the town center more development ready, more attractive for private developers. And, you know, the priority needs are obviously sidewalks and pedestrian crossings and streetscape improvements and utilities and public spaces and landscaping and lighting, all of those. They all complement each other.
It's also important to note that these public realm investment strategies are not just for outside developers. They're a part of the puzzle. But this also sets up the table for current property owners to realize more value in the parcels that they own. So this is setting up for what we would call incremental development, so small stage development for current parcels, for current owners to realize more value, and at the same time bring in development partners that understand the value and the vision of Montville and what Montville wants to remain as it begins to answer some of these residential needs and this public realm need. Mm-hmm. But those will work together, right, in an incremental fashion over time to maintain the character as we see it.
Exactly. I want to emphasize that this would be phased. That you're not, the town is not laying out a tremendous amount of money for all of these public improvements at once. In fact, that's the second to last bullet in terms of really thinking of this as phased and pairing the public improvement investment, public infrastructure investment with private development opportunities and maybe even leveraging public-private partnerships where, you know, the town initiates some early infrastructure investment that makes it more attractive to developers and then developers invest an additional infrastructure investment at their development that becomes public infrastructure. And I should note that, you know, we're in the ninth round of the Connecticut Community Investment Fund, and the town of Montville did submit a funding application to round nine. It was due on Friday for public infrastructure funding in the nodes that we've talked about. So what are the priority next steps? We're spending the rest of the month finalizing the investment plan. Again, around the community's shared priorities for housing choice, active public spaces, and walkable mixed-use centers. We want to move the town center vision forward. Well, we showed you a number of nodes. We think the priority node is let's start at the town center because I think that's where you get the most bang for your buck. And that's where, you know, it's also the center of Montville. So let that be the first phase. And let's identify priority projects in the town center. Let's identify what needs to be done to get sites ready. And let's identify near-term funding opportunities, you know, from the state and other sources. As the town is already doing, as I noted, through the SIF, you know, pursue infrastructure funding for streetscapes, utilities, public spaces, other improvements that are going to make the town center more attractive to developers. Also, as I noted, let's update the zoning and design standards so future projects are easier to implement and they're better aligned with the vision. I wish Dennis were here, but incorporating the investment plan's priority into the town's next plan for conservation and development, POCD, to help guide future growth and investment decisions. So, you know, this investment plan should be part of the next POCD for Montville. And then advance this vision, again, let's leverage private money. You know, let's make public investments wisely to leverage private money from developers so that you have a true public-private partnership to realize, you know, our vision rather than this is not going to be a single all-at-once project. It's going to be phased over many years. So that is our presentation.
So with that, we'd like to ask if there are any thoughts or questions. Mayor, it sounds like
I just want to say that it's important to remember that as Steve just said, this isn't going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next year. It's going to be a long-term plan. And to make my point, 20 years ago, we had a public safety plan. And everybody said, you know, it's a waste of money. What are you going to plan for? Well, you know, over the years, we haven't actually taken from that plan to go forward with fire, police, other developments, and we actually use that plan. This is a plan, and if you don't have a plan, you're not going anywhere. All my years that I've been involved in town, it's always been, we order. And nobody ever put together a plan so that we could do anything. This is something that we can refer to for years to come and have a goal, and this is what we think we should do. It doesn't have to be exactly this, but this is something that you can have for a rule of thumb, just a direction that we're going to go in. And Dennis,
Dennis Vermeer and his staff, Stacy and Meredith and Catherine now, they started this. We approved a $60 million application on a CIF grant to start with phase one, a small section of phase one. It includes the town hall to bring it up to where it's comfortable and fix the roof and fix the air conditioning. The other part is the streetscape up front. You saw a little hint of what that could look like. It doesn't have to be exactly like that, but it could look like that. And then more planning on the intersection of 32 and 163. So I know this is taking an awful long time, but it is very important so that we know where we're going. We've got a great planning and zoning commission. We've got a lot of good members there with some good ideas, and we can make this work. And we just have to have a goal. Here it is. Thank you.
So yeah, we're here to answer any questions.
Well, thank you very much. For a couple of months in March, this is really good. So a lot of good stuff.
They've done a lot of work. They've used a lot of good information. They put it all down on paper.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'll make a super quick comment.
Yeah.
I'm a project manager for an electric utility,
uh-huh.
for rec utilities. And when you guys are doing eventually the future projects like this, it is an awesome opportunity to pressure EverSource to go underground through these sections. It's really feasible when you're moving poles. It's actually cheaper than sometimes, depending on the situation. And I just think, obviously, you're talking really high level right now. I see all the poles in the picture. I think maybe put in a plan eventually that the great time for EverSource.
Thank you, Barry, those poles.
Yeah.
All the trip.
I love
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Change the standard for next one. Okay.
Okay, at this time, I think I would like to alterations to the agenda. I think we have a few to add to it. Do we have any alterations to the agenda? Nope. I believe we do.
No, she has to reschedule for next month.
All right, so.
Are you, Agnes? I apologize.
We got to revise the executive session. Seven A needs to be removed, and I need a motion to. I'm gonna read the executive sessions needs to be reworded. And I'm trying to see.
I'll make a motion.
Hold on just a second. I haven't read it.
What are we doing?
I have no idea.
Item D.
I'm actually reading it. It looks like this is the same. Okay. So I'm going to make a motion to revise the 7B to read. Consider an act on a motion to enter an executive session for the purpose of discussing the employment of Chief of Police. Discussion to include members of the Town Council, Mayor Leonard Bunnell Sr., Town Labor Attorney Christy Kelly, and Montville Police Department Chief William Blanchett III.
Got that, Agnes?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right.
You want all in favor?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so we're going to read that in. Do we have any other alterations to the agenda?
You say you're removing 7A?
7A has been removed.
We need a motion?
Yeah, motion to remove 7A. The person that will be is not available.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you, Councilor Baker, for pointing that out. Any other alteration in the agenda?
Did you want to add for the approval of the after executive session.
I need the language. You got it?
No. I thought it was given to you.
Oh, I need to add one more thing to it, and that'll be...
yeah, it's here. It's here. Where did you want to go in the PBCD?
It'll be 16H. We need to add, consider an act on a motion to reappoint the chief of police to authorize the mayor to execute an employment agreement setting forth the wages and benefits for the period of any such employment, an initial salary of $140,000 effective July 1st, 2026, subject to annual cost of living increases to be set by the town council in future, 20 days of vacation, and certain other provisions regarding accrual of compensatory time and unused paid holiday.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, so that is all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, that is added to the agenda. Any opposed? All right. All right, this time, I guess I can read it now. Consider action motion to enter executive session for the purpose of discussing the employment of the chief of police, discussions to include members of the town council, Mayor Leonard Bunnell, Sr., town labor attorney Christy Kelly, and Montville Police Department Chief Wilford Blanchett III.
You got some minutes to approve, too, right?
Mr. Chairman, you want to, item number six, approve the minutes of the previous meeting?
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely right. I'm brain dead right now. Well, can we just go ahead and do this, and I'll jump back to it?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Actually, we're running executive session, so we can do it when we get back, I guess.
Okay. Motion to go into executive session.
Motion to go into executive session. Anybody second that?
So moved.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Is that your phone? Oh. Yes. You keep turning that one. I keep turning that one.
Brian, I just didn't want to read that whole thing again.
Okay.
Thanks, Agnes.
Just remind me. Just a minute. Note the time. It is, just want to remind everybody, it's 8:43.
Thank you.
Out of executive session, no votes were taken. All right. I'm going to go back. Councilor Baker pointed out, consider an act on a motion to approve the regular meeting minutes of May 11th and May 28th, 2026.
No move. Second.
Any discussion?
Those are the budget. Was it the budget?
No, it was a special meeting.
That was well, one was a regular meeting of May 11th, one was a special meeting of minutes of May 28th. Any more discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Executive session is done. Remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda with a 3-minute limit.
Kimberly Dole, 19 Sharp Hill Road. I just wanted to talk a little bit about what was presented today. I completely understand and want to see changes in Montville and to bring towns in and see the growth. I think it's really important. But I think we also need to kind of keep in mind that from what I was hearing and from what I heard in special session, because they were here for that as well, that there's money that has to be put towards that by the town. I think they said at the special session something like $220,000. That number came up. I don't know in what regard to the project that was entailing. But my concern is that also in that session, Councilor May, you were very, very poignant in stating that the budget was very tight and that departments are going to have to really, really look at cutting and seeing where they can cut moving forward. And when we're doing that and saying that, you know, in our meetings, and I agree with you, because our costs are going up exponentially, and that's across the board. We just need to be thoughtful, right, and see how we can find other dollars to help support this project. You know, grants are great, and they're important, and I live off of grants. That's my job, as Mr. Karen knows. But the reality of it is we can't just be putting money into things while we're hurting the public in the same process. And I hear that there were a lot of meetings and people wanted certain things, and I think those things are great, but we really need to look at how that's going to happen in a responsible way. We have contracts that aren't completed yet. We have lawsuits that's gone on irresponsibly, in my opinion, that has cost this town a lot of money. And to be quite frank, the money that was spent on some of those probably could have paid for what we're talking about currently. But we need to look at things in a well-rounded piece and look at what's best for this town. And yes, I think doing some of this stuff is going to be great because it'll bring companies in, but we also have to look at what our bottom dollar is and where we can get that money to support the project without putting it on the backs of the town's people here. Thanks.
Any other remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda? I'm going to go one more time. Remarks from the public relating to matters on the agenda. All right, moving on. Communication, copy of the legal bills from Sussman Shapiro for the months of March and April 2026. Copy of the legal bills from Helleron and Sage for the month of April 2026. Copy of legal bills from Attorney Michael E. Sadak for the months of March, April, and May 2026. Did everyone receive those in your packet?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Reports from town attorney on matters referred, Mayor?
No report.
All right, remarks from the mayor and or administrative department heads quickly tonight to include matters referred.
I'd like to start off with the report from the finance director, Julie Chapman.
Good evening. At finance committee on Thursday, we discussed that this past month significant time was spent compiling reimbursement paperwork for the animal control facility. The payment request was submitted and it was a quick turnaround. We already received our first reimbursement of $1.8 million on June 2nd. The final $200,000 will be requested when the closeout for the construction of the project is completed. Electronic purchase orders are scheduled to go live July 1st. This implementation has been a year in the making, collaborating with the IT department and Munis. The system has a workflow process for approvals, and so there'll be no more carbon copy requests circulating throughout town. This will improve the oversight of purchases and adherence to the purchasing policy, and in the next couple weeks, we'll be setting up training for the rollout to departments. The other thing that was discussed, which is coming up on the agenda, was the modification to the hauler admin fees and police private duty fees, which you'll discuss later on in the meeting. Does anyone have any questions?
Well, not really a question, but it's something you pointed out at our finance meeting of the collection rate for the tax for the taxes. You give a percentage. I thought that was some really good news.
Yeah, it's over 99% currently. We're on track to be at over 100%.
Nice. Good, good job.
Julie, thank you for everything you've done. I sat through the last finance meeting. I know we brought up a couple different things. One was the amount that the Housing Authority owes us. The billing should go out to that just so that they are aware what the next bill is for them. And
okay.
I know they owe us quite a bit. But
yeah, I believe they owe more than 3 years.
Yeah, I do. I do too. But that, it would also be just to make them aware of that, and also the money that we did talk about that was being paid from the WPCA to the town. If that can be looked at about implementing again, I think I know as Kim has just said, we can use all the money we can get, and you know what? I agree with her 100%.
Yeah, we can look into that.
Yeah, because, I mean, the town, the taxpayers foot the bill for these town buildings to the WPCA for water and sewer. We, you know, it's only fair. It's a small amount of money that they should be paying.
Okay.
And they were paying. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question, please.
Sure.
Julie, 99% collection rate. That means 99% of our residents are paying their taxes?
99% of what was budgeted for tax revenue has been collected.
Okay, so after a period of time that someone doesn't pay their taxes, does that go on a different list?
Yeah, I believe it's after 10 years. They're put on what's called a suspense list.
Okay, thank you.
And they can still pay if they're put on that list. It just doesn't reflect negatively on the town.
Okay.
So, yeah, just for clarification, is what we're budgeted to collect and what we're actually collecting is matching very close,
okay,
which is good. Great. And it's been that way for about like 5 years. I just want to point out there is one thing that's really top on all the counselors, and just to remind us the timekeeping. We want to keep that going, and I think we talked about how we're going to get there, so maybe we can have something to discuss on that later.
Yeah, on next Wednesday we have a kickoff meeting with ExecuTime to begin the process of electronic payroll.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good job, Julie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you, Julie. Public Works, John Carlson.
Good evening, everyone. John Carlson, Public Works Director. So today there was a big meeting on the community center bathroom. They have almost completed demolition. By the end of this week, at the beginning of next week, they'll be starting on the plumbing and HVAC system in the bathroom. We had to clarify a few minor changes that are going to happen in the bathrooms, but it's moving along very fast. I don't have an exact ending date, so because, you know, as any project with that caliber, you can end up with a couple snafus in the system. So they had a little bit of a slow process, but it's moving along forward and fast. The pier is moving along really good right now. They're still looking to complete it by July 1st. We did have that little issue with Eversource last month. That's been clarified. The only concern I have, and I know I talked about this last month, was the Japanese knotweed trying to get rid of it before it grows through the asphalt. That's my biggest fear. Butler Town Road has been started. We have one issue with a tree right now that'll probably go to a public hearing. A resident is not concerned about taking down a tulip tree. I'm working on learning how to do that process. Have not been through that process as tree warden. So East Lake Road, we've done quite a bit of work on that for cutting that back. I'm looking at paving a small section that hasn't been completed yet, but we're still working on it. I know the changes to the garbage bag, we're trying to get that out to the general public to let them know that the 13-gallon garbage bags will start in July 1st. I currently have a John Deere boom mower tractor. The boom is ready to fall off the tractor. A couple structural welds broke. I talked with the mechanics. They said we either have to buy the piece or try to make it. But the problem is it got like a jig to it. So if you weld it together and it bends just a little bit, it throws all the bolt holes off. So it's not something that's going to be a simple fix. They got to remove the whole arm and basically take the whole tractor apart to do it. So I'm down one mower at this current time. I only have two on the road due to manpower right now. We are still sweeping. I'm hoping to get Maple Avenue, the rest of Maple Avenue, out to bid soon. We're working on some of the finalized. I did a final walkthrough with the engineer the other day, looking at the road, analyzing a couple sections that we were looking to try to make sure that we do it right. So it looks like we're going to actually reclaim the road starting from where we left off on Public Works, and we're going to go all the way to the scale house at Rand and Whitney because of the way the asphalt is there and how many times it's been cut and recut and dug up and stuff. So we actually lengthen the amount of distance we're going to go with the reclaim. So the last phase of the Maple Avenue that was done last year, we're still dealing with grass issues. He's trying to get it to grow. We'll see what happens there, but we did hold money back from the contractor to make sure that the grass grows properly for everyone that lives there on Maple Avenue. I believe most of the complaints have been addressed on the section that we did. So I still have, you know, a few outstanding little things for people that I would need to look at, but, and that's about it.
Thank you.
I have just a quick, more of a clarification on the 13-gallon garbage bags. I see a lot of people making comments. Can they bring down in a large garbage bag the 13 gallons inside it and take it out? Is that acceptable? Because some people have cars and they don't want to have
garbage, yeah, you know? I see it as...
I
personally have a 33-gallon garbage bag. It's actually, 32-gallon garbage can. So I put three 13-gallon garbage bags in there. But like anyone knows, if you leave your garbage in there too long, it smells, right? You throw a little chicken or something in there, and next thing you know, you got 1,000 maggots coming out of it. So I always line my bags, my cans with bags, and then I put my bags inside the bags. So I see it as if you have a 33-gallon garbage bag, or they're about round. If you had two of them and maybe two small 13-gallon garbage bags, I don't see an issue with that. I don't think we have to stick strictly to the 13-gallon garbage bag. I think we just have to stick to a volume issue, you know.
Okay.
And it's a you know.
I think the public needs to know that because there's a lot of people that are really freaking out.
Yeah, we're trying to get that information out there, you know, to make sure that we at least, it's going to be on the job of the actual transfer station attendant at the gate to look at people's and say, hey, you know, if you have three bags that are 33 gallon or thereabouts, because they make them as a 33 to 39 gallon garbage bag, you know.
All right.
Can I chime in?
Well, I was just asking him, I want to hear it from the man who's telling his employees that when they're coming down there, but sure, if you want to ask a question.
Yeah, there's a reason we did what we did, and that is we want to make sure that the public is paying their fair share for the amount of garbage they dispose of. That is what the issue is, and that's why we did what we did.
I mean, obviously,
these bags all weigh different. A 30-gallon bag weighs a lot more than a 16-gallon bag. So when it comes down to it, we just want to make sure that the people that are underutilizing it are not paying the price for the people that are overutilizing it.
I don't disagree with that. What I'm just saying is I just wanted to ask the Public Works Director, because people were asking, can I put three of my bags in a big bag, come down there, and then take it out of the big and throw it in there because they need a way to kind of shield that from their car. That's all.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not talking about, because the way it was presented is people are saying, they will not allow me to bring that on the site at all or that type of thing. So I just want to make sure that hopefully that word gets out and your attendants know that, and then, you know, we can move.
We're working on a plan to put something together to kind of show people what 8 times 13 would look like in a common garbage can. Basically, your recycling bin is 95 gallons. So if it fits in your recycling bin, it should fit in the 8-gallon, 13-gallon bags. So it's going to be a judgment call on, and then unless we go with a paper bag system, and then that's going to be a totally different ball game.
Yeah.
So.
Any other questions? Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thanks, John. Police Department, Lieutenant Bradford.
Dave Radford, Lieutenant Marple Police. My farewell, I guess, update on the animal control facility. This Saturday, we have our grand opening ceremony. Finally, we're here. If anybody's been by it, they have the animal welfare group has the memorial garden just about completed. There's a few more finishing touches that will be ready for Saturday. The facility, again, this Saturday, June 13th from 11 to 1 is going to be the grand opening ceremony. There'll be some food trucks, some vendors, a whole lot of people, some open house, if you will, to be able to tour the facility. We're here. That's all I got.
Can I ask you a question, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
How about parking?
The parking will be, it's going to be similar to the groundbreaking. Next to the salt shed is where the vendors and the food trucks are going to set up. And so it'll be pretty much the parking will be down below, around Public Works, around back. People kind of found their way during the groundbreaking ceremony. I think it'll kind of be the same.
Thank you.
I just want to say thank you for all your hard work. There's a lot more than just what you did, but it's how you did it and why you did it that I really impressed. That you it shows that you put a lot more heart and effort into this than I think you had to, but I'm really glad you did.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant. And for my report this month, I attended the Board of Ed recognition of three employees that are retiring. Karen Dragoo with 27 years, Joanne Dixon with 22 years, and Joan Smith with 23 years. They're all retiring this year. We had the Lafayette Farewell Tour marker unveiling this past weekend. It wasn't well attended, but I do appreciate the counselors that were able to make it, Council Chair Tim May and Kate Southard. Appreciate you being there. I won't go into detail because it's getting late, but we're still working on the 250th celebration. Anyone that's interested, go to the town website, and you'll see the schedule for the events that they're having in connection with that celebration. The new building official started, Mark Tebbets. He started on the 11th of May. That closes out the contract we have with CCOG. I'm letting the council know that I received several complaints about a housing authority commissioner, and I would like the council to allow me to schedule some hearings under the appropriate statutes sometime in July.
Yeah, I understand. So this is will be a special meeting for this hearing, and I think I'd like to hear somebody from us to make that recommendation to the mayor. Did we do that?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to ask that you hold the necessary hearing for the issues that were.
I'll second that.
All right. Arisen.
Okay.
So, seek out with the town attorney, find out what the procedure is,
yep,
and set a date in the future. And because I think to do a hearing, we don't do them very often, so we need to, make sure it's done right. So, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm good.
All right. Reports from standing committees, town administration, rules of procedure.
No meeting.
All right. We got a lot of things on here from your stuff. Good work on that. Finance. We heard a report from our finance director. And then public works, solid waste. We just had a thing report from John. But what you got there, Councilor Baker?
Everything that I've got on the report was covered by John. The only thing that wasn't is we were able to dispose of a Toro Groundmaster commercial mower and the 1991 KME Spartan fire apparatus, and the net on that was $4,176.
Cool.
All right. And that's it.
Reports from special committees and liaisons, councilors. Councilor Baker, public safety.
Let's see here. Public safety did not meet on May 27th, and that was due to a lack of quorum. However, I do have the month of May emergency services statistics for you. Fire department had 303 calls for service, and that was an average of 9.77 calls per day. And the police department had 1,025 calls for service, which was an average of 33.06 calls per day. That's it.
All right. Thank you. By any chance, does they give the dog animal control report too as well? Not already tonight, but just maybe in the future we could find out how that's going. They used to do that in the past.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Sure.
Council Karen, Commission on Aging, Nonprofit Organization, Social Services.
I did hear from some of the nonprofits about, because I had to inform some of them that the mayor's cuts, and that we'll probably revisit that down the road. Social Services and the Senior Center. The Senior Center had their annual Older Americans Month dinner, which was sponsored by the Mohegan Tribe. The Mohegan Tribe paid for everything. from water to coffee. It was greatly attended, over 100-something people there, seniors, and they did honor Mrs. Clark. The tribe is also, I've asked them for the elderly housing, even though we do not have any jurisdiction over the elderly housing, only appoint and a removal on the two elderly housing. Their water, they have some issues with their water. I did ask the tribe, as the senior center director had asked me, where we could get some water, and I asked the tribe. The tribe is donating 40 cases a month right now to the elderly housing, and also delivering it, and the Masons are delivering it to all the apartments. And that's about it for me.
Thank you. Councilor Jaskowitz, Planning and Zoning Commission.
The Planning and Zoning meeting of May was canceled, and the next meeting will be June 23rd, 2026.
All right. Councilor Novak, Economic Development and Volunteer Firefighters Relief Fund.
Yep, the Firefighter Relief Fund, we're meeting on July 27th, and the Economical Development Committee, we're meeting on Monday, June 15th. So I don't have anything more to report.
All right, on that. Councilor Sebelia, Conservation Commission, Water Pollution Control Authority, Youth Service Bureau, and Advisory Board.
I just want to mention Conservation Commission held their Trails Day on Saturday. It was at Horton Cove Trail, Lawton's Trail. Tyler Lawton, he designed the trail. He came down, so it was nice to see him. There was a good amount of kids. They did scavenger hunts, and it was a good time. So hopefully more kids attend in the future. WPCA, I was not able to attend. Youth Services, we are meeting Thursday, but there's a couple things I just wanted to share real quick. The 988 hotline, they just had a couple stats. They responded to 3,500 total chats and texts to 988 from January 1st to April 30th.
How many?
It was 3,553 total chats / texts. They also, last month alone, 211 responded to nearly 18,000 calls to 988. For mental health assistance. 97% of the 988 calls in Connecticut were answered within 5 seconds, and less than 1% required escalation to 911 for active rescue or emergency response. So 988's working. It's being bombarded with kids with mental health issues, and I'm glad they're bringing awareness to it as the Youth Service Bureau, and I appreciate their work with that. They're also, summer program is just about full. They expect a very active and fun group. They encourage you to check out their latest Channel 3 interview on mental health awareness and their You Good Bro campaign. That was with Scott Haney and Kara Sundland, and the link is on their social medias.
Thank you. Appointments and resignations. To consider an act on a motion to accept the Councilor Southard, Board of Education, Farmers Market Committee, Library Committee, and Parks and Rec Commission.
Okay, I'll start with Board of Ed. They just did a relaunch of their website. It is more aesthetically pleasing and easier to use for both staff and parents. They approved a cost of $110,744.64 for new switches at the high school, Tile and Palmer, with a savings of $5,000 that they're going to put towards the tree work at the softball fields. And yes, there's that. And the financial reports, the initial budget was $47,284,831. They've expended $34,468,390. Encumbered is $8,770,184,000 with remaining funds of $4,739,256. With an anticipated expense of $42,750,000. Work continues on the air quality at all of the schools, and the elementary schools will be done. Yes, the elementary schools are going to be done over the summer. Non-lapsing account 2%. Start of the year was $705,851.66. Their balance is now $61,407,000. $7. So they've used quite a bit of that. And finally, for Board of Ed, they have been working on the contract for the superintendent. They are increasing her salary by 5%, including a stipend of $5,000 for her educational doctorate, extended the contract through June 30th, 2029, and an increase of the annual annuity by 5%. Parks and Recreation, they worked on adjusting pavilion rental fees to be more in line with other towns, and they're going to go back and take a look at adjusting the fees for out-of-town renters. Camp registration started. The first 2 weeks will be at Camp Oakdale due to all the work being done at all the schools in town, and the rest of the weeks will be at Murphy. They approved the privacy screen for the pickleball tennis courts and approved $10,000 to help with electrical of Camp Oakdale storage building. The library, I missed a meeting due to our budget meeting here, town council meeting. I'm waiting on the minutes. In Farmers Market, we have a meeting coming up on Wednesday.
All right, thank you. Consider act a motion to accept the resignation of Richard Gladue from the Water and Sewer Commission effective immediately.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Councilor Baker.
Favor.
Councilor Karen.
Favor.
Councilor
Dressel. Favor.
Councilor
Rose. Favor.
Councilor
Southern.
Favor.
Favor.
Favor. So 7-0 in favor. Unfinished business, there's none. New business, the town of Montbell hereby resolves to refund taxes due to overpayments and corrections in the amount of $9,422.36 as requested by the tax collector.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call vote, please.
Baker.
Favor.
Karen.
Favor.
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 Favor. Favor. 7-0 in favor. Item 16B, the town of Montbell hereby resolves to accept the declaration of a grant of private conservation easement in the favor of the town of Montbell and authorize Mayor Leonard Bunnell to execute same on behalf of the town of Montbell and the road widening strips in accordance with a warranty deed from Patchogue Capital LLC to the town of Montbell dated May 22, 2026 as required per Planning and Zoning Commission resubdivision application number 24-SUB-2 approved on August 27, 2024 in plan entitled Black Ash Estates resubdivision land now or formerly of Patchogue Capital LLC, Black Ash Road and Old Colchester Road, Montville, Connecticut, dated 8-22-23, revised 7-22-2024.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
And Mr. Chairman, this I got a little bit of an explanation on this conservation easement. It's a two-part resolution. One is for the road strips along that run alongside the subdivision on Black Ash and also on the Old Colchester Road that allows the town to reserve the property or the strip for
maintenance
and whatever, snow clearing, whatever it might be. But the rest of it is a partial conservation easement on 10 acres, a total of 10 acres about, and it's four different parcels of land that prohibits the property owner from doing certain things on that property in the name of conservation. It's mostly wetlands, but it would prohibit them from using the property for any type of construction.
Well, I understand it, but it says I don't get into all this stuff. Typically, a conservation easement in favor of the town of Montbell
means
that it seems like that would be used for that purpose. But there are conservation easements that are applied to things, but usually doesn't say it's directed to the town.
Right, but this isn't open space. This isn't that kind of thing. The property is still owned by the person that buys the main part of that parcel. But there's like 3 acres set aside that would be used for it would be prohibited from doing any kind of construction on it.
Yeah.
In the name of conservation.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Open
All right.
Date.
Any more discussion? Roll call vote.
Councilor Baker.
Favor.
Councilor Karen.
Favor.
Councilor Dressel. Favor.
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 Favor. So that's 7-0 in favor. The town of Montville, this is item 16C. The town of Montville hereby resolves to approve and adopt the ordinance titled All Terrain Vehicles Ordinance as heard at public hearing held on Monday, June 8, 2026 at 6 p.m. in the town council chambers at Montville Town Hall.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
I'd like to make a motion if on 37-21, the penalties. Councilors, if you could pull it up.
I think you want to do an amendment.
I'd like to amend that, make a motion to amend it. And where it comes to the first violation of $1,000, I'd like to change that to make that be either a written warning or a $125 fine. I'll repeat that. Either a written warning or a $125 fine. Also with no seizure on the first violation.
Okay, so that article, that one you're reading is, so I just want to be clear so everyone understands it. You're saying we're going to change it, that the first violation will either be a warning or a fine not to exceed $125, and that the vehicle is not seized on the first offense.
Yes.
Is everybody clear with that?
May I say, I don't think that we should put in the seizure part, because if the police find that someone's doing something really egregious, they reserve the right to take that. I mean, if they're being not safe or they're, I think we're getting ourselves in a box if we decide not to put that. I'm okay with lowering the fine, but I don't think we should put that.
Make just follow through with the motion. First motion, then you go.
Let me. I'll second Billy's motion on the change, and then we can get to discussion.
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. All right. Now discussion on it. So, Councilor Novak, you're making a point to this. Anything else you want to discuss on that, Councilor Novak?
No. Just to leave that out. We have to reserve the right to be able to take it away.
So the way it works, you made the motion. Do you want to keep it? Or
we'll keep it for the vote, and then Rachel can put up that too. Does still have strength to, if I'm not mistaken, they can't seize unless there's a major violation of that. That's when they would have to. Is that true, Chief? Okay. Okay, so it would be taken if they had to, but we're saying it would be no seizure of it for the violations that are in here, violations that we consider in here.
I disagree with that. I do. I think once we start taking the discretion away from the police officers, we're really diluting this to a point where it shouldn't be diluted to. If that officer comes upon a vehicle with a rider that is completely disobeying the law, swerving across the road back and forth, doing crazy stuff, I think they deserve more than a fine. I think that vehicle should be seized and then leave it up to the parents how they want to deal with it after that. We need to send a loud, clear message out to the people that this type of nonsense is not going to be
All right. Well,
in a town.
You can obviously vote your way on this.
Well,
what's that?
You just have the motion. Just move the motion.
Well, I just want to say, be clear. Any other discussion? All right, let's move the motion.
The motion is what, please? It's just to revise it about a written warning or $125 fine. That's it?
And
the change?
No, it's also seizure.
Not seizure.
On the first offense only.
No seizure on that warning or
on the first warning.
First one.
It's either a warning or $125 fine and no seizure. That's what's on the. That's what's.
Wait a minute now, but if I read this, is there a seizure on section one of the penalties? Section 3 has the seizure. Any police officer that observes a person in violation of this section may detain such person for purposes of enforcing the provisions of this act section.
So you just moved that down there.
So that's three. Counselor. That'd be section three of the penalties.
What Councilor Novak said was, she said, no, don't mention seizure because it's not there. But if we leave it there, then we're not going to. So actually, I think if we just vote it through right now, it's fine. There's no seizure going to be done on section one.
So, yeah. So we're only talking section one, which is monetary penalties. And then section three refers to the seizure. So right now, we're only.
We're doing is
I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
No, we're not saying that at all. What we're just saying is that there was never. A seizure was never involved in section one to begin with.
That's right.
All we're doing is underscoring it. That's all we're doing. So let's move the motion.
I'm confused.
Well, what's on the table?
We are just amending penalty one, which has nothing to do with seizure. So
that's right. Thank
Billy
you.
Billy wants to clarify the motion he made.
It's not to have a $1,000 fine on the first offense.
Correct. What it's just changing the first offense to either a written warning or a fine not to exceed $120.
And not to seize the vehicle on the first
one. We're not adding that.
I know that, but that is his motion, is to remove.
That was his motion, is to add
that. Yeah,
to remove it.
You can't remove something that's not in that section.
Thank you.
But that's it's in section one, so we can't remove something that's not there.
So I'll go to section three.
Well, that's a different motion. So okay. Either got to withdraw this motion and redo it, or we vote it through.
So I'll withdraw my motion. I'll go back to a new motion, if that is fine. If you can remove your second, Mr.
Sure, I would remove my second.
So my first motion will be to remove the $1,000 fine.
Section one.
In section one, replace it with a written warning or a $125 fine. In section three, on the first offense, no seizure.
No seizure at all?
No seizure on the first offense.
Yeah, that's not the way it's written.
That's not section three, is it?
Yeah.
Section three is this first offense.
Maybe fourth offense. Maybe C's in section three. The only thing I have a problem with that on is somebody could really be way out of hand.
So do you know what? Do you have the motion, counselors? Just it's easier just to move the motion.
So what motion are we making now? I want to be clear.
I support the first motion about in section one.
Let me just read this because I don't know if it's done it. Any police officer that observes any person in violation of this section, which is penalties, may detain such person for enforcing the provisions of this section. Any all-terrain vehicle used in violation of this section may be seized by any police officer and may be forfeited to the town subject to a bona fide lien, lease, or security interest in the all-terrain vehicle, including but not limited to a lien under general statutes.
We already changed that to say may. I don't understand why we got to.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It
does say may.
Yeah.
So you know what, counselors?
We just change that.
Keep your motion to penalty one for now, and if you want to go to the seizure thing, then I think.
Yeah.
Okay. It can be a separate motion.
That's a good idea.
All right. So we have a motion for section one for an issuance of a warning or a maximum fine of $125 for the first offense.
So move.
Second.
Any discussion?
I'd like to see a 250, but that's what I'd like to see, a minimum of 250 for the first offense. But that's
move the motion, Mr. Chairman.
All right. We'll move the motion. If you, Chairman Rick, if you want to make another motion, you're welcome to do that. All right. Roll call, please, on the motion.
Councilor Baker.
Opposed.
Councilor Karen.
Favor.
Favor.
Councilor Novak?
Opposed.
Councilor
Sebelia? Favor.
Councilor Sutter?
Favor.
Councilor May?
Favor. Now, that was just for the amendment.
Okay.
Now, any other additions or changes to the language before we go into the final vote to vote approve this or disapprove it?
As long as we keep the seizure intact.
We have not done anything. There's a whole paragraph three on seizure that somebody needs to talk about.
And if I may, I thought this was changed already.
Mm-hmm.
When we had our first meeting, it was different wording, and we changed it to May. Correct,
Mayor? No, we're not talking about the May. We're talking about seizure.
Because the word is May.
What does it say now?
Used in violation of this section may be seized.
That's right. This section may be seized by any police officer.
It was not may. Will be seized.
He's saying we addressed penalty section three already after the last public hearing.
Correct.
No, you're good.
Hey, it's correct. Right. So it's worded as may be seized.
That leaves the discretion with the officer on the scene.
All right. Are we ready for the full vote, or is there any more changes or amendments?
So, Councillor Sebelia and Councillor Southard, what is your opinion on that part right there? I mean, you both were involved and had major discussions on this thing, on this part with the seizures. Bring it forward, what you both think, please. It seems like I'm the only one here speaking on it. Can you guys speak on it?
I think that what the people in the audience that were here earlier are worried about is not right now with their machine being taken, because they know that the chief and the lieutenant and all the other officers are reasonable and use common sense. It was expressed to me by several people that they were worried that when they leave, retire, move on, whatever, that somebody would come in and see it more of a black and white thing and not honor the may piece in this part of the ordinance.
But if I'm not mistaken, the people would have the right to appeal if there's a problem.
Correct.
Am I correct?
Correct.
Exactly.
So here we go.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's covered.
Right is there.
Are we positioning that somebody wants to add something to this and amend this?
No.
Or are we going to move forward on? It sounds like the word may is in there. Good word. that suggests that the police officer has variability to do that. But Councillor Karen, you made a point in your opening statement that you did not feel, and I think Councillor Southard, that the vehicle should be seized at all.
No, seized in the first violation. It's all I'm right. saying. In the first violation.
I wish we could add something that said, like, the vehicle will not be seized on the first offense unless it rose to a certain level of crime, or you know what I mean? Just because, so there's something more concrete than just may be seized.
Exactly.
Because they're worried about, I mean, like we said, we trust our police 100%, but they're worried about an officer having discretion. And if you've lived in this town, we've had some officers who didn't always use the best discretion with certain things.
I think that happens in any town.
It does. It happens everywhere. I'm just saying. So, but right now, with the way this is written, it's giving them leeway to take it from a kid on the first offense. I'm not saying they will.
But what if that first offense is very...
That's why I'm saying, I wish we could say something that says will not be taken on the first offense unless the crime rises, you know what I mean, to a certain level. I just don't know how it should be worded.
Remember, this is unregistered vehicles, so it's not just children that this is talking about.
They're
100%.
Breaking the law.
100%.
We're talking about the whole spectrum.
Yes.
Of people. It's not just children. It's also young adults. It's also adults.
And remember this, that the vehicle is normally routinely towed anyway. So, in effect, it is being seized. That's standard procedure.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I think what we do then is he makes the motion, we vote on the motion. We're going to support it or not.
Yeah. That's all you got to do.
We can always amend this at a later date and add something. I know it would be a process, but if we wanted to add better language or do it now, I don't know.
Language was changed, Councilor.
Yeah,
I get it. You already had it once.
You mean on first offense, if it rises to a certain level of a penalty of law by
penalty?
Law?
I don't know.
What is that certain
know.
Level? You got to identify
what I mean.
That.
I don't know. I'm just trying to...
I think we're too late in the game.
All right, so I think we either need to table this or we need to vote on this.
Just move the motion.
So, well, now we're ready to vote on the ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Is that any more changes? Is that correct?
Yeah, just with the change to penalty one.
Okay. Any more discussion? All right. Roll call vote for the ordinance, please.
Councilor Baker.
This just is on the balance of it after the one changed, correct? Just want to clarify that.
The only thing that was changed was in the other one, and it
section
it, one. Section one is a warning violation or $125 fine
for a first violation.
We removed the $1,000 fine for the first violation,
and that passed.
That passed.
All right. This motion is to approve the balance of the ordinance as it is written,
except for the one section we changed.
Yes.
So favor.
What is your vote?
Favor.
All right.
Councilor Karen?
Councilor Karen.
I'm kind of conflicted on this one because it's that right there is a little issue for me.
Should we come back to you?
Yeah, please.
I'm in favor of that change in section
one. No, you're in favor of the ordinance. We're voting on
yes, with that change.
Yes.
As amended.
As amended.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I am in favor as amended.
I'm a little torn as well, but I do think that we need to trust our police department to make sound decisions in these situations, and I think we have a really good police department, and I think our people need to trust them. So I think they will use good judgment, so I'm in favor.
All right, can we come back to you?
Please.
Councilor May?
Favor.
Councilor Karen?
Favor.
Councilor Southern?
Opposed.
So what's the vote totaling? There we have.
6-1.
So it's 6-1.
So the ATV ordinance, I say, passes. As amended. Section 1 amended. That's important now because I want them in there.
All right, I'm going to move on. Item D, the town of Montville hereby resolves to approve and adopt the ordinance titled Ordinance Establishing a Permanent Building Committee as heard in the public hearing on Monday, June 8, 2026 at 6:30 p.m. in the town council chambers at Montville Town Hall.
So move.
Second.
All right, any discussion?
Yes, I have something. Could we have something, maybe table this, so the Board of Education has the final say on the building?
They have a say.
Is that in the ordinance?
It's actually in the ordinance.
Because I was looking for it.
You go back to the public hearing, and everything that Mr. Pike was talking about is in there. But it doesn't say the superintendent. The superintendent can go to any meeting.
Mm-hmm.
These are voting. These are people that have to be there. So if you, let's just put this in kind of perspective. If you put the superintendent has to be at every meeting, that could be quite arduous for them, you know, because they're a department. But that doesn't mean she can't go.
Of course.
These are people that actually have to. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the Board of Education has the final say for the yes or no of the project. Because it is a school building.
No, the people, the citizens of of Montville have the final vote because all those will have to go to referendum. There'll be a bond. So the actual people that will actually vote on it will be the citizens.
Right.
Okay.
So what, you know, the building committee has to, then after it's voted on to do that, the money's been approved to go do that endeavor, then they would then go to a building committee to make sure it's designed and facilitated and all this stuff. Because there's more to a building than just building a building. There's also the site, the planning, and everything. So those nuances that were, I think, articulated earlier, I believe are articulated in this ordinance.
Yes, they are.
And I think, you know, because I read this and I wanted to make sure, and that's why I commended Councilor Jaskiewicz because they did take that to what Carol Burgess, the chair, you know, brought to them.
And they did it. Sits on it.
And then she then incorporated it. So it is there. And if you want to read it, take a minute to read it and see if there's something we need to add to it to amend it. No. But I think it's been done. And that section you're talking about is item F. Permanent Building Committee or Board of Education shall consist of a minimum of 5 regular members, 2 alternates, One member from the town council, one member shall be from the Board of Education, and one member shall be the Board of Education Director of Facilities. The remaining members should be made up to town residents at large. So it just doesn't say superintendent, but the superintendent is obviously...
Okay.
If the superintendent wanted to be on that committee for that project, that superintendent could easily say, I'll fill that spot.
Okay.
I mean, the bottom line is, obviously the Board of Ed's going to have most of the say on it because it is a building for their use, not our use.
That's why we included the facilities.
Correct. And bottom line is, we as a town council have to vote on the appropriation for that to send it to referendum, so the taxpayers would have to vote on it. So there is a three-step process.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Council Baker.
Favor.
Council Karen.
Favor.
Council Jasper. Do I say favor?
Favor.
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 Favor. So that's 7-0 in favor. Item 16E. The town of Montvale hereby resolves to consider and act on a motion to introduce and set the date for a public hearing for discontinuance of PTA Lane pursuant to Connecticut General Statute Section 13A-49 on 20 July. Is that correct, Mayor?
That's correct.
At what's a good time? 6 p.m.?
6 p.m.
Well, I was going to see if anybody wanted to.
6 is good.
I believe I'm out of town.
Really?
No, you're not.
The
public hearing will be held at the Montvale Town Hall in the Town Council Chambers.
Oh. Second.
All right. Any discussion? All right. Roll call vote.
Council
Baker. Favor.
Council
Karen. Favor.
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 Favor. Item F, the town of Montvale hereby resolves to increase the administrative fees to $8 per ton to the individual haulers for the disposal of solid waste in the town of Montvale effective July 1st, 2026.
So move.
Second.
All right, any discussion? All right, roll call vote, please.
Council
Baker. Favor.
Council
Karen. Favor.
Council Jaskowitz.
Favor.
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 Favor. So that's 7-0 in favor. Item 16G, the town of Montvale hereby resolves to approve the following increase effective July 1st, 2026 in the fee schedule for extra police duty to read 35% administrative fee, $60 per hour vehicle charge. The hourly police officer rate is governed by the union contract.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call, please.
Council Baker.
Favor.
Council Karen.
Favor.
Council Jaskowitz.
Favor.
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 Favor. So that's 7-0 in favor. Item 16H, consider an act of motion to reappoint the chief of police and to authorize the mayor to execute an employment agreement setting forth the wages and benefits for the period of such reemployment at a initial salary of $140,000 effective July 1, 2026, subject to annual cost of living increases to be set by the town council in the future, 20 days of vacation, and certain other provisions regarding accrual of compensatory time and unused paid holidays.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call, please.
Favor.
Can you come back to me? No, I'll favor.
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 Favor. Favor. So that's 7-0 in favor. Agnes, I have this. This is the contract I need to have put on the record. We'll get it in a minute. Remarks from the public with a 3-minute limit. Uh-oh.
Dave Radford, Lieutenant Montville Police. First of all, Councilor Sebelia, thank you for putting your faith in us. But just wanted to kind of add to that real quick that just because if and when we did to decide to seize a vehicle, we're not the final say. The magistrate would be the final one. So it doesn't matter what we want, what we do, the magistrate is the final say.
Thank you. Thank you.
When do we have one?
And I hope we really research that right there. I think we have some say in that too. The councilors, we're going to, when that comes about, who we get?
Who, for the magistrate?
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Yeah, that's something the mayor's got to work on.
Yes.
And we got to pay for it.
All right, Mark. Paid position, Dave?
Remarks from the public with a 3-minute limit? All right, moving on. Remarks from the councilors. We start with Councilor Southard.
Thanks. Well, I appreciate all the people that came out tonight and spoke for what they wanted, and I hope that everybody understands that my opposition was not opposition against our public safety people. It was opposition to vagueness and, you know, worry that people had out there. So that's it. Thank you.
Councilor Jaskiewicz.
Thank you for coming and bearing with us. I see Channel 3 finally left.
They knew you were going to talk.
Have a good night.
Councilor Carey.
No, I have nothing to say.
Councilor Sebelia.
No, nothing really. Thanks, everyone, for coming. It was a long night, per usual. But, yeah, got a lot done, and I think we're good.
Councilor Baker.
Thanks, everyone, for coming. Thanks, everyone, for hanging with us. And I think what we did tonight was a positive step forward.
Councilor Novak?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming this evening. Sorry we lost our audience. But for as many as people that oppose this ordinance, I had several emails from people that favored it. So with public safety in mind, that's why I favored the ordinance. We have to remember that this ordinance was not meant for lawful citizens. It's for people breaking the law. And if the residents that were opposing it are following the law, then they should not have anything to worry about. And I'd also like to mention that I went to the swearing in of our new officer, Jack Perkins, that he needs to be mentioned this evening. Thank you very much.
You want to mention me?
All right. Okay. Just a minute, Joe. We'll get at her in a second. I just want to say for the ordinance, you know, that's I see a lot of things like at the Conservation Center, there's ATVs going through and tearing it up. And then a lot of people I that actually asked me about this ordinance were private property owners that have people running through their properties and they can't do anything about it. And that's a real problem in this town. And it's also safety. I'm seeing a lot of really unsafe stuff. And I just think it's a good thing that we did this ordinance, and I hope it helps. Because the last thing is I want to see somebody get injured or hurt. With that in mind, Mayor, you got the last word.
No, I'm good. Thank you. Oh, happy 4th.
Motion adjourned.
Happy 4th of July.
We'll move. Oh, just everybody, you know, I'm going out of town for 2 weeks.
We're good.
You want me to drive you home?
I think that they go a little bit on the road. I got to see their fire.
It's against the law to be on the road.